pleasure to be here. I'm Mike Anderson. I'm at Oklahoma State University, and our project relates to trying to connect the rhizobial community with productivity, and most specifically in wheat. As we all know, the rhizosphere has a strong influence on plant growth and development. And the rhizosphere consists of many, many different organisms, including bacteria, fungi, algae, protozoa, and insects. Okay, little micro-insects. And the bacteria, however, constitutes the base of this pyramid. Many of these organisms feed on bacteria. So in the literature, we find kind of two classifications as far as plant growth is concerned. We find rhizobacteria divided into plant growth promoters, as well as a classification known as deleterious rhizobacteria. So in the literature, it's been indicated that there are a number of mechanisms that enhance the growth of plants in the rhizosphere by bacteria, and these include enhanced nutrient efficiency, protection against pathogens, provide growth hormones, and they also are known to influence root growth and development. Again, the rhizosphere is a very complex region of not only many, many different organisms at different trophic levels, but also the rhizosphere is also very environmentally heterogeneous. And this was pointed out clearly in a number of talks earlier yesterday morning. And so in order to unravel this level of complexity, we need some very powerful tools to deal with this. And pyrosequencing has become a really important tool, specifically for looking at community composition. It's a very good tool to do for doing that, and maybe less so for metagenomics. But in our pyrosequencing experience, we get reads from anywhere from 400 to 500 base pairs, which is sufficient to classify to the level of genera. And then the main advantage of pyrosequencing is that you can sequence many hundreds of thousands of DNA fragments simultaneously. So it doesn't cost a whole lot compared to the traditional type of sequencing, and it's able to sequence these complex mixtures, and that makes it ideal for the soil community and for the rhizosphere community, looking at community composition. What you do need is PCR amplifiable DNA. And of course, we look at the 16S ribosomal RNA gene. That's really the one that most people look at. And this gene is composed of a number of conserved regions as well as variable regions. It's about 1,500 base pairs long. But because pyrosequencing has a limitation of about 400 to 500 base pairs, we have to very carefully consider where we're sequencing this particular gene. In our case, we used the V1 through V3 region, and we found that that was sufficient information to identify to the level of genera for most cases. One very important point is the 16S ribosomal RNA gene is a multi-copy gene. So between organisms, they may differ in the number of copies of ribosomal genes. That provides a limitation to the use in the ribosome in doing quantitative type work. Okay. Our objective is to identify the rhizobacterial community that's associated with productivity. And to do this, we're using pyrosequencing and correlation analysis. The methods that we used, we grew plants, wheat plants, in the greenhouse, and we categorized them according to their shoot biomass from high to low. And in this case, we had five categories: high, medium, 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 low, and low shoot biomass. We grew the wheats again in these large teapots, Tofikis 9, and then we harvested the shoot, categorized the rhizospheres, collected the rhizosphere material, and froze it in a freezer, And then we extracted the DNA using a commercial kit, the Mobile Ultra Clean Soil Kit. And then we submitted the DNA for pyrosequencing. And we identified the sequences using the ribosomal database to pyrosequencing pipeline. And then we determined the number of phylotypes per biomass category. Phylotype is a classification based on varying levels of phylogeny. Okay. Then we did correlation analysis and then identified the phylotypes that were most highly correlated with productivity. Again, we used sandy loam field soil. We grew one plant per pot, okay? And then we watered the plants uniformly, and no fertilization in this experiment was added. The rhizosphere was gently extracted by the shake method, and again, we extracted the DNA, and the pyrosequencing that was done by the research and testing laboratories in Lubbock, Texas. We received all the data, and then we did a global normalization to adjust for differences in PCR amplification prior to pyrosequencing. This slide represents our biomass categorization. We have five categories from high to low, and each category is represented by seven rhizospheres. As you can see, the maximum dry weight was about 4 grams on the high side, and on the low side it was about 0.8 grams. So we had about a 6 to 7 fold increase in biomass across this distribution. Okay, so we took advantage of that to try to correlate the community composition with biomass productivity. We can see down below that there is a very nice, almost linear, near linear relationship between the categories. Okay, if we look at the pyrosequencing summary, we got 26,000 good sequences back. And this is the distribution. These are the most abundant ones. There's a number of interesting ones. We always get Acidobacteria, Gymnotomonas, and a number of others. Proteobacteria really dominate this. If we look at the correlations, these are some of the good, really good examples of correlations. We have Pseudoxanthomonas, which was very highly linearly correlated, as well as Planktomycetes. And then we did nonlinear correlation because we found that many of these did not show a linear response. So we used a number of models, including a dose response model, a binding model, an exponential model, or even a linear model. We used about 10 models and selected those which had the best relationships. From this, we found that about 88% of all significant phylotypes showed a nonlinear response to productivity. And the greatest one was in the dose response. That, by far, gave us the greatest modeling efficiency in this. So most linear, the trick here is that most linear models fail to model the rhizosphere community response to biomass. So we really have to use non-linear models to deal with this. And the dose-response relationship seems to be the best. Here's an example. You can think of the plant as the shoot as being the dose. It produces the carbohydrates. And in the roots, that's where the response to the rhizosphere community occurs. We get this dose response curve. This is an example of a variable slope type association curve. Okay, and this one appears to model the response of the rhizosphere community best. So again, the shoot being the dose, it produces the carbohydrates which are exuded through the roots, which causes the response in the rhizosphere community. Here are those that are most associated with shoot biomass, and we had to have some cutoffs. We used those that had showed greater than 40 sequences, an R squared value of 0.90. We sorted by relative percent slope, in other words, percent change per gram of biomass, and the slope reflects the linear response to biomass. So if you have a higher slope, like 11.7, it's going to respond more to biomass. So the greatest responders were the Clofleria, Pseudoxanthomonas, Planktomycetes, Bacillus, and the Sphingopyxis. We also saw some negative responders, including Streptophyta and Aquafisia. And many of these are in underrepresented groups. If we look in the literature, we find that Clofleria and Pseudoxanthomonas and many of these respond to decomposing plant or xenobiotic type carbohydrates or carbon sources. And so many of these may be associated with degradation. While the negative associators, we found a lot of Streptophyta, which is chloroplast, and especially in the lowest category, and Aquafisia. These are all autotrophs. If we look at the phylogeny of many of these, we find that many of them are in underrepresented groups. These are the numbers of ISI references for each of these, and we see Clofleria basically has very few references in the published databases. Most of these are proteobacteria, and they include either the gamma, the delta, the alpha, beta, and we even had some of the epsilon. And so most of them were proteobacteria, a few acidobacteria associated with productivity. If we did cluster analysis, we found to look at those that responded similarly to biomass, we found Pseudoxanthomonas and the Planktomycetes were very nicely, tightly associated as well as with Sphingopyxis. And then the second cluster, the Pyrolula and the Clostridia were also associated with it. Our conclusions are that the rhizobacteria respond to increasing productivity in a nonlinear manner, and that a dose-response relationship best models this response in the community. Positive associators included Clofleria, Pseudoxanthomonas, Planktomycetes, Bacillus, and Sphingopyxis, while negative associators included Streptophyta and Aquafisia. And many of these associations have never been characterized and therefore need further investigation and confirmation. Now, this information is not only important for productivity, but it will help define what constitutes a productive rhizosphere in plants. We have future research that we're planning, and I can talk to you a little bit later about that if you're interested. But entertain any questions if there's any time.
We have just a little bit of time for questions. Yes.
Yes.
Have you done any single culture studies with the ones with the genera that you found promote the productivity?
We do have all that, the rhizosphere material in the freezer, and we plan to do that. Yes, go ahead. Okay, now that's a limitation of the number of the size of the sequence. Now as pyrosequencing gets better and better, you get longer reads, we can go to the level of the species, and that will give us a much greater refinement on which, on what to target, essentially. Yes?
Well, related to comment on that, you could also design primers to amplify the specific genera that you're interested in.
Oh, absolutely.
Do you know if the response is nonlinear because of the abundance of the microbes or because PCR is essentially a nonlinear detection?
That's a very good point. I don't know that. I don't know the answer to that. It could be an artifact of the PCR. That's certainly a possibility. But the dose response curve makes a lot of sense to me, that kind of a model. So just thinking about it, it does make some sense.
But it also looks like the acute PCR response curve.
Could be. that will have to be investigated. Thanks.
I have a quick question. Uh-huh. You talk about the dose response curve, but you do this based on above ground shoot biomass.
Did right.
You look at all at root biomass or root exudates or
no.
Anything like that?
No, we did not look at the root, and we did that on purpose because the root, in order to be quantitative, it's very difficult to obtain the entire root. So we wanted to obtain something that was easy to, at least initially, easy to pick out, and that was the shoot. Okay, so you have to simplify things at first when you're working on things.
Understood.
Yes.
Rhizobia,
we didn't, in Samia's presentation, she found it to be deleterious, okay, and you got to remember we're working with wheat. Now, rhizobia certainly isn't deleterious with its associated legume.
I meant the rice here, I'm sorry.
Okay, go ahead.
I'm sorry. Are you going to look at
like seed yield and
yeah.
Things like that? Yeah, that would be a very good study to do, I think. We're just assuming that if you have a bigger shoot, you're going to have a bigger, higher yield. And that may be a valid assumption. Yes?
I just have a comment to make in light of the gentleman's question about the pyro sequencing.
Right.
Just at the ISTE meeting in Seattle in August, and I went to the Terra Genome Workshop where a lot of pyro sequencing and metagenomic data was presented. There seems to be some issue that's not exactly understood on the reproducibility.
Yes.
Of pyro sequencing from run to run.
Mm-hmm.
There are some issues that remain to be worked out with that. Mm-hmm. We still solve a lot of PCR amplification issues because of the bead structure of the pyro sequencing that you cannot do with improved PCR reactions in the multiplication step. But there still seems to be some issues that people are going to try and work out in that regard.
Yes.
But it's still probably much more illuminating to do the pyro sequencing than other methods. Now, a comparable method that's independent of amplification would be the biochip arrays.
Yeah.
And it would be interesting to see when people start getting involved in comparing pyro sequencing with the Generation 3 biochip that's coming out
mm-hmm.
from Anderson's lab, then that might shed a little bit of light on this question. Mm-hmm.
Well, does the phylochip depend on hybridization?
No. Yeah, well, hybridization, yes, but not amplification.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you're avoiding any potential PCR bias in amplification.
You can reduce PCR bias also. There are techniques to reduce PCR bias, but you're certainly right. If you're dependent on PCR, you have that amplification.